Welcome. And now, Free Fire Radio. Radio.
About to commence.
Good morning, North State. Welcome to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460 at 7:06. September the 30th, the last day of September. Not only do we lose the summer, now we're quickly losing fall. Our phone lines here are 605-4567. That's 530-605-4567 for those of you who are out of the area. And you can listen to us on KCNR1460.com as we stream. But the big thing on that one is you can chat with us. Get in there and call Bob names. In fact, the one who can guess the color of Bad Bob's shirt, of the flowers on Bad Bob's shirt, wins two tickets to the Monster Truck Rally. That's right. You have to just get close. it won't be easy. That's right, though. If you can guess the colors, just call in 605-4567. We'll give you two tickets to the Monster Truck Rally going on this weekend.
We got a lot of those to give away this morning.
Got a lot of those to give away today and tomorrow. So if you want to run, if you want to ride, if you want to watch, here's the place to go. And speaking of Bad Bob, say hello.
And good morning, and a big shout-out to Graham Brockreedy, who has joined the Army. He's heading shipping out to North Carolina, and if he happens to be listening or his family members are listening, we say thank you for your service. And
God bless.
Hurrah.
You're a hero, son. And, you know, this is just the first step in many, many that you're going to be taking over the next few years, I can tell you.
And just remember, always, that this is voluntary.
That's right. You know, they write the check, and they hope that we never have to cash it. But speaking of cashing it and being the one who's just here.
I'm good at cashing it.
There you are. It's my bride, Linda. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be back. And, of course, I'm going to be throwing it to Cameron Middleton. Good morning.
Good morning, Linda. Morning,
and,
Carl.
And I'm so glad that you're going to be co-hosting this morning. I'm going to be here just at the first part this morning, getting ready because I do have to be out in the field doing things. By the way, this evening, I just want to let you know that I'm going to be out at the POAC Chamber of Commerce fundraiser with Pat Karch Trio. That's going to be in the back of the Dean House. It's going to be a very nice fundraiser for those of you who are looking to maybe do something to support the Chamber and the Political Action Committee. Tonight, there are still tickets available. You can call the Chamber. And Nancy Sutton Pierce will be sitting in with me tonight. She's got interesting guests as well as on stage with Lisa. If we're on the spot with Linda Bott at 6 p.m. tonight, that'll be great. There's so much going on this weekend.
Can we talk about last night?
I'm about ready to go there.
Okay.
But there's so much that's going on over the weekend. The second we have, of course, at the Cascade where we were last night, is the North State Symphony opening and their gala, which will be a tremendous event. It seems like everything's stacked. We've got the beer fest going on.
Yeah. We know Cameron will be.
I mean, when you open the date, there is on that page of 10 things to do, they're all on Saturday night. You've got the Bark and Wine.
Haven's Bark and Wine.
The Manton Apple Festival. You've got the California Cowboys Pro Rodeo Association state finals happening at the fairgrounds. Of course, the Symphony Gala. And last night, we had the great pleasure and honor to hear a legend great. When you talk about, okay, that's like world-class best.
Oh, you had he was in the Blasters. He helped form the Blasters. And then one of his accompanists there on the steel guitar,
Cindy Cashdollar, five-time Grammy winner.
Five-time.
Dave Alvin and the Guilty Women, and each one of those girls, it was just rich music. Of course, Rockin' Ron was there with his gang.
You got to love this guy. Rockin' Ron, we had him on the show yesterday, and we asked him, what exactly is roots music? And he said, last night on the stage, I didn't really give a good answer to it last night, yesterday on the radio, and I've been thinking about it. He says it's like Pat Boone or Fats Domino singing.
I'm sorry, I don't know what song. I know what you're talking about. He talks about that it has to come deep within the gut and the resonation of what a person feels. That's the root of, you know, I guess soul or whatever. It's not that Pat Boone doesn't have soul, but when you think of Pat Boone, it's a little airy.
Yeah, I'm still sitting here trying to think of what I was going to say.
I don't know, Cameron, you're going to be getting these questions all day long. You got to think fast on your feet.
Will do.
And make it up even if you don't know, because everybody, we'll get the chat room open and people will correct us. Yeah. You know, that's how it works.
Yeah, and that's good because they're always there. You know, today, besides Cameron, we've got a number of people rolling through here today. Fly fishing, we've got Patrick Jones. Mayor of Jones will be here to answer your questions and talk about the election. There's been the ire of certain people has raised dramatically over these elections, and we're having each one of them on. We're having each candidate on, of course. We've had Francie Sullivan and Patrick Jones this week. Next week we're going with Gary Catt and Saunders Spears, John or Don Kirk. Just we're filling it up just so everybody gets a shot.
And Carl wasn't kidding, because I've got it in my hand, and one of the reasons I wanted to stop by this morning before I had to go off and do some of my interviews this morning was I have these monster truck tickets, and I have heard nothing but great things about this monster truck show. Is way more outstanding than the monster truck shows down in Sacramento, because of the fact that you can come up close, you get to meet the drivers. It's family oriented. You can go down. They can sign your T-shirts. The kids get a chance to meet the guys. It's not this separation. So we right now 605-4567. I have a family pack of four for Sunday's show. That is the Monster Truck Show. This is general admission. Four tickets, family pack. That's October 3rd. This is a chance for you to go take your kids out, have a blast. And we want to give those away to somebody who's going to use them and enjoy them. And then, well, not that we have all these prerequisites, but please do call us back after you've gone.
But wait, first you've got to guess if Bob's wearing a shirt or not.
Well, that's another one.
Oh, okay.
And we're just happy if they take them and they go.
Speaking of that, we're going to take a break.
When we come back, we'll announce who the winner is of those four tickets. And we're going to take a break here. This is Carl and Linda Bott. This is Free Fire Radio. Cameron Middleton sitting in today. And this is KCNR 1460.
Timber.
Free Fire Radio. Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio. KCNR 1460. Carl and Linda Bott. It's 7:17 in the morning. September 30th. Our phone lines here are 605-4567.
Good morning.
This is our guest co-host today, Cameron Middleton.
Thank you, Carl. Glad to be on. Been looking forward to it.
Turn Cameron down a little bit here. Going to blow off the system here.
We do have a winner, by the way. I was sort of...
Oh, that's right. We have a winner for the ticket.
Lori, congratulations. You're going to be taking yourself and three of your closest acquaintances, friends, family, whatever, to go see Monster Trucks.
And you guessed that Bob did not have a shirt on, and you won. It's a little scary here, but it's a little hot in the studios. You know, it's coming right here. That sweat's dripping down.
Oh, please.
Yes.
Didn't
okay.
need that visual.
And speaking of weather, what is it today?
Well, it is a hot day. Weather, of course, is always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. From the National Weather Service today, it's going to be sunny and hot with a high near 101 for the last day of September. A little bit of a light northwest wind, but it's going to taper off here, looks like, as we're going into the weekend. A little bit into the high 90s on Friday and Saturday, and then right back down into some cool 80-degree weather on Sunday and Monday.
Yeah, it's currently 65 degrees. You know, Cameron, are you? Is that an Obama sticker I saw on the back of your car?
I'm pretty sure the only sticker I have on my car is a Cal sticker.
Oh, okay.
I am a currently mourning Cal Golden Bear fan right now. We had a tough time last weekend.
Do they still play football?
Football's still on the docket, but that's this week. Looks like we lost baseball and possibly rugby,
That was Cal that got rid of all
that. Yeah, that's my alma mater.
They got rid of all those sports.
Oh, I think there were five different sports, and to lose the baseball team program is just crushing.
The rugby team used to be one of the top ones in the nation.
It is the top team in the nation. I was there all the years that I was at Cal. We won the national title every single year, and most seasons were completely undefeated.
Well, you know, the reason I asked that, it looks like in a Rolling Stone interview, Obama is going is going after Fox News. Rolling Stone editor Jan Winter asked Obama for his view of Fox News and his view on whether conservative mogul Rupert Murdoch's network is a good institution for America and for democracy. Well, now, see, here's what Obama could have been, that healing force. He could have been that force to bring people together, that force of reason, the force of sanity. Nah. He started by saying that he will always uphold the Constitution's guarantee of free speech and be able to put Musk on ground zero. And noted that the United States has a tradition of a press that oftentimes is opinionated. There's only been a short golden age of objective press, he said. Well, I'd like to know when that was. I really would like to know. You know, because back in the 1800s and 1700s, things were being said in the press that that then you had the option. You could go out to the newspaper editor, slap him in the face, and challenge him to a duel, and one of you would walk away.
Then you'd have a new editor.
Yeah, a new editor, or nobody else to write about the next day. Or something to write about, because the editor just shot the person you've been writing about, or vice versa. Anyway, a short golden age of objective press. Throughout American history, continued, there have been publishers like William Randolph Hearst who used their newspapers very intentionally to promote their viewpoints, unlike the New York Times. It's up today. That's right. Hey, Mr. President. Hello. Wake up. He says, this is President Obama, and I quote, I think Fox is a part of that tradition. Is a part of a tradition is a very clear, undeniable point of view, Obama said. It's a point of view that I disagree with. It is a point of view that I think is ultimately destructive for the long-term growth of a country that has a vibrant middle class and is competitive in the world. I'm sorry, obviously you are reading the New York Times. Because if you look and see what you and your administration have done, Mr. Obama, you'll see why Fox is saying things. Anyway, the point is that Obama is taking on Fox News and saying how they're unfair. Not once did he mention MSNBC. Not once did he mention CNN. Not once did he mention the New York Times. Not once did he mention the Washington Post, the LA Times, or any other rag like that that does take a stand in their stories and how they do it. So Obama to say this about Fox, and I'm not saying Fox is, you know, clearly down the middle, but that's because they've got a lot of opinion. A lot of people are giving their opinions on this. Is their news? That's what you have to ask. Is their news fairly unbiased, not their comments?
Yeah, and there's a lot of times people can't make the distinction between the commentary and the news. And you know, oftentimes in some of the institutions you said, MSNBC, New York Times, it falls off the editorial page and onto the news page, and that's what you really need to get at.
So is like Olbermann an example of this down the middle factual reporting style that Mr. Obama,
because Keith Olbermann is a god to him, because he's always right and everything he says, because oh my gosh, anything that Obama does is okay with Keith. And in fact, Chris, what's the guy's name? Chris
Matthews
still has tingles running up and down his legs every time he sees Obama.
Well, I've always found the Ed Show to be completely unbiased.
Well, you know what? That's true. Oh, here's the other thing. Everybody, they did a survey, and you know, of course, O'Reilly, you know, killing everybody, and people didn't even know who Rachel Maddow was, who was going against him. Didn't even know who she was. Got to take a break here. It's Carl and the Bot. Linda's out on assignment today, and our guest co-host Cameron Middleton, who is one of our city planners and an entrepreneur here in the city, and we're glad to have you here today.
Well, thank you, Carl. Like I say, been looking forward to it.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a minute.
Hi, I'm Patrick Henry.
1460 Free Fire Radio and KCNR 1460, a home of Free Fire Media. It's September 30th, 7:25 in the morning. Phone lines here are 605-4567. Carl and the Bot. Linda's out on assignment. She was here earlier this morning, but our co-host for the rest of the day is Cameron Middleton. Good morning.
Good morning, Carl. Morning, Bob.
City planner that you are.
It's been interesting of late.
So how come you allowed the hotel to be built?
I was the single dissenting vote.
Really?
Yeah, it was a 5-1 vote. I was the only one to vote no.
Why'd you vote no?
I still thought a few of the issues weren't addressed that I needed addressed. Certainly number one was the emergency secondary access. And I think it can be handled, I think, with some modifications down there by KRCR with that secondary emergency access they have now. We could make that sufficient. The other was parking. We need to have more parking down there, not less. And I think if we can shoot for that, and we should be, you know, adding extra parking requirements, trying to increase the amount rather than decreasing it, which is what we're tending to do. The other problem, you know, I still feel very strongly we need a master plan for that area. And we need to look at that entire area comprehensively in terms of transportation, secondary access.
Why aren't we doing this? You guys are the city building commission.
Well, we're trying. I mean, personally, I'm trying, and there's a few others. Something like this takes some time to get organized. The other problem, of course, is money. Right now, it's, you know, the projection is it's about $125,000 to do this. So I'm figuring there's some ways that we could probably do it for much, much less. I think a task force would be appropriate. Get some commissioners from Community Services Commission, Planning Commission. Get a council member, perhaps, to chair. So you've got citizen volunteers, basically, that would be doing a large portion of the work. And see if we could get a graduate program, maybe at a school at Cal Poly, Berkeley, some other ones where they might be able to, in their city planning departments, get a graduate program who can put together a lot of the staff work, do a lot of the visuals, the graphics, some of the organization, some of the other things, but use the ideas from the community, keep it an open process. I think we could put together a good master plan for that area.
Well, you know, with the hotel going up, and they're saying that the entrance of Turtle Bay would be the entrance to the hotel. Did I see that right?
In a way, it's a little difficult, but yes, the lobby is still doubling as the visitor center.
Uh-huh.
And so you still will be able to access the museum through that visitor center.
Okay. Now, the once the hotel is there, and is it going to be a big impact on the Civic Center at all?
I don't think it'll be too big an impact, and I do give some credit here where it's due. One of the main issues is with regards to traffic and to parking. Most of the people that show up at the hotel will be there after 5 p.m. and before 9 a.m. So you're really not going to have most people that are coming to the museum, they're going to KRCR, the Chamber, some of these other spots, going to be doing that during the day where most of the traffic flow is. Hotels generally have traffic flow in the early morning and at night.
I have a question on nights like the Freedom Festival and any of the rodeo events going on. Isn't that not going to create quite a bottleneck?
It is. No question, and that was absolutely one of my concerns. 130 rooms, 80-seat restaurant, 4,000 square feet of meeting space. It's going to have some.
Well, you know, that's the other thing. You know, if they are having conventions there, and then and the way people stack things around here without, you know, there is no clearinghouse, you know, for stacking stuff, which is why you have eight events going over a weekend, where before you didn't have that. You just have more and more things happening in Reading and in North State. But Bob's perfectly right, or the person in the chat room that came up with that. And so you've got a convention, you've got a rodeo, and you've got people backed up for an hour trying to get out.
Oh, sure. You've got to remember, too, there's kids that go down and do those events down at Viking Skate Country, people that might want to have something. There might be an event, a wedding, whatever, on the Sundial Bridge.
Are you telling me it's going to be a perfect storm of trying to get out over that one bridge? And here's the other thing. How come the police aren't there a lot of times? A lot of times it's just a light. When, you know, I've been there before, and the police have not been there leaving the rodeo or a big event.
I'm not sure how they break that down. That's a very interesting question.
Am I wrong? I mean, I've been there sometimes when they've been there, but
sometimes they do it, and sometimes they've
they
got
don't.
Some folks, and
yeah.
Sometimes not. I'm not sure what the threshold is. Imagine that's up to the chief.
Yeah.
And
the threshold is if it's backed up an hour and a half, let's send one of the guys down there. So anyway, we got to take a break here. Sorry, Carl and Linda Bott, Free Fire Radio, right here on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. Join us after the news. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio, right here on KCNR 1460. Carl and Linda Bott, good morning. September 30th, the month that slipped away from us, and here we are getting ready to go into Halloween month. 7:34 in the morning, and let's go to the phones. Jim, good morning. You're on KCNR.
Good morning, Carl.
What's up?
Hey, I wanted to ask Cameron the reasoning that the Planning Commission used to decide to allow up to 19 growing marijuana growing facilities inside the city of Reading with up to thousands of plants per site?
Well, good question, Jim. In terms of the 19, we really couldn't go in and didn't feel we had the authority to go in and shut ones down that were already existing. So the 19 that are there, I think almost all of them are grandfathered in. And that's a big part of the problem. It actually came down, that number came down slightly with the permitting process. But otherwise was, they basically are grandfathered in, is the answer to that question. In terms of the thousands of plants per, those actually aren't at the dispensaries. Those are going to be off-site in an industrially zoned area, fully enclosed. And one of the, I think one of the benefits to that is it helps to keep a bit of an eye on it. By having these in some industrial areas.
We're warehousing marijuana right here in River City.
Oh, they're going to be, they're going to be warehousing it. They're going to be buying areas in industrial zones with fully enclosed buildings, and they can do up to 50% of the gross product that they send out of the dispensary will be in some of these areas. So I think one of the objectives with that, too, is to try and get it out of people's backyards as much as possible, where a lot of this growing is occurring. And in the homes and in the residential areas, and try and move it to an industrial zone.
If people continue to come to our community and join these co-ops, and 19 of them, and say each one has, 1,000 members, or as big as 5,000, I guess, some of the bigger ones on the coast, and we'll continue to expand these industrial sites to allow, again, the growing of thousands of marijuana plants.
They could, if it does start to get so large that it does become a primary problem, it's something that we as a planning commission can always readdress, and so can the city council. And this one was actually handed to us from the council. They address some other portions of the marijuana ordinance. Some I'm in agreement with, some I'm not in agreement with. But this is something we can always reevaluate. And we really are on about a six-month cycle right now. This was a review that we did after 6 months of the original zoning ordinance that we enacted. And we're also going to be picking it up again, I would imagine, another 6 months.
Jim, if you think this is something, wait till you see what happens if Proposition 19 passes. One of the worst written initiatives ever. Even the, everybody's against it, yet it could pass. And you think it's bad now? Stand by.
Yeah, Carl, you're absolutely right.
If I may, the city has already decided how to deal with that. They're not going to allow any selling here in the city limits if it passes that initiative. But what I think they've decided is to promote and encourage the growth of the co-ops as far as numbers of members, now allowing them to... Who's monitoring all this? 50% of the co-op member plants can be grown. Well, are those 50% also growing in their house or on other sites? I'm not so sure this is such a smart move by the council.
Yeah, Jim, good question, and the answer to that is the police chief. I mean, the chief of police is the one who's really monitoring this, and I've spoken at length with him regarding this issue, and the chief has certainly brought up on a number of occasions. One of the main things he wants to be able to do is see the books, which he can do. He's got full open transparency to be able to see everything. One of the main things with having these warehouses and these things to be able to supply the cooperatives, the main element that he wants to keep out, and I don't want to speak for the chief of police, but is organized crime. And by knowing that, okay, this is coming from a place here over, say, on Caterpillar Road or off Airport Road, and this is an industrial area, I can see where it's coming from, here's where it's being grown, it's being brought over to the cooperative, here's everybody involved, I can see the numbers, I can see everything. He knows then that organized crime is not involved and that it's not going through.
Well, with his current manpower, aren't we breaking new ground here? I mean, how many cities in California are taking this like we are? Oakland's the only one I know of. I'm really concerned about this. Yeah. I don't think it's a good move.
Hey, Jim, we've got to take a break. But you know what? You're right. And the other thing, too, is how many cities are allowing this to happen and what is the results? I really haven't seen anything. I know that Oakland only allows three places in the whole city to sell it. They may have the warehousing of growing it, but only three places can sell it within the city limits. But,
we don't need the money that bad.
No.
We don't. It's not the kind of money I think we should be having here in Reading. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. All right, Carl Lindebot, this is our... co-host today is Cameron Middleton, who's on the planning commission. But our guest, who's just been sitting here patiently, Creighton Smith. As soon as we come back, Creighton, from our commercials, we're going to get into why you're here. Radio on KCNR 1460. Carl and Linda Bott. It is 7:44 in the morning, September 30th, and our guest co-host is Cameron Middleton. This portion of the show is brought to you by B&T Satellite, right off Airport Road. Doug Tooley and his merry men are putting in Dish Satellite. They do great work, great job. He guarantees his work, puts in surround sound, home theater systems. Been in the business since 1985. Call him at 244-1988. What's the weather today?
Well, looks like it's going to be hot again. Last day of September, we're going to be sunny and hot. High near 101. A little bit of a wind from the northwest. And currently downtown here at KCNR, we are 64 degrees.
Thanks, Cameron. Hey, our guest today, Creighton Smith. Good morning, Creighton. Good
morning, Carl.
Now, some people may not know who you are, but I've known of you since I've moved here. And you have a lot to do with fly fishing.
Yeah, Carl, I've been involved in it for about 40 years now and grew up fishing. My grandfather was a fly fisherman, and it was just something natural as I grew up. And as participating with the Shasta Trinity Fly Fishers, one of our chief objectives is to kind of spread this around. There's a lot of gray hairs in that group. We'd like to bring in more kids, women. A lot of people I run into say, yeah, my grandfather used to do that, or, oh, I have a good friend who does that. It looks so, you know, kind of graceful and so forth. And the whole intent of this fly fishing fair is to offer people an opportunity to see more about what it's like, cast a rod, see what fly tying's about, all those things that we think contribute to a really great sport.
Okay, let's talk about the fair here.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be
Saturday, starts at 8 a.m. It'll go to 2.
8 a.m. to 2.
Yeah, to 2 p.m.
At
the Caldwell Pavilion Park off of Quartz Hill Road there. It's the furthest entrance as you turn west on Quartz Hill Road. And we're going to have the fly shop's going to be participating. We've got a swap and sell, people that have fly fishing equipment that they may want to bring in and swap for something better or sell to the public. That'll be available. A lot of
casting lessons. How about tying lessons? Like how to tie those little bitty flies onto your little bitty line that you use that you're supposed to throw out into the water.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's names for these, right?
The midges.
The midges, okay. Now, see, I have a fly fishing rod. Now, my buddy, Mike Quinn, he says, how many rods do you have? I said, one. And he just rolls on the floor. He says, one?
Yeah.
One? How can you fish with one? I said, there's only me. There's just one, you know, two hands. It takes two. And he goes, you need 40. I said, you know, 40? Do you really need to have 40 rods and 40 reels and have them all there ready?
Well, I could get in trouble with answering this with my wife. But I'd have to say a good way to start is about an 8.5 to 9-foot five-weight rod. That'll cover you for a lot of different fish and fishing conditions, rivers, lakes, and so forth. I like to build my own rods, and I give classes in that to fly club members. And it's a good way to save money on rods and equipment as you kind of get into it. You may want one for bass and one for steelhead and so forth. So it does have a way of exponentially growing as time goes by.
Well, Creighton, I've got to ask the question: how many rods do you have?
I think I'm in the 20s right now.
Okay.
Well, according to Quinn, that's still not enough.
No, probably not.
You know, the thing I think I like, I've been fly fishing once. I got a fly fishing rig. It's a nice one. It's kind of the one you described. 15 years ago. It's been out with me once. Except time I've had it out in the backyard, you know. Oh, yeah, I can do this. I went out once down on the Trinity. Linda bought her father and I a guided trip down there. Caught a steelhead. It's beautiful. Yes. And the guide goes, okay, put it back in. I'm like, hmm? He says, "Yeah, this is a native." I said, "How can you tell if it's a native?" I was looking for. He says, "Yeah, you know, it still has the fin,
adipose fin.
The adipose fin is still there." He says, "If it doesn't have the fin, then they're free game." And it's like, "Oh, you mean that was the other thing? You mean you've got people in a fishery that's all they do is cut off fins? I mean, is that how they do it?"
That's right. Yeah. In fact, I think next week the fishing game has requested some members of the club come by to do that at the hatchery. And it is important for keeping census information on how many returning steelhead are hatchery versus the natural. So,
just one more question, too. You know, I at my shop have people come by all the time from out of the area. Want a nice local spot to go fishing. And without divulging some of your best secrets, Where's some of the best spots?
Oh, man. You know, there are such a...
We need Latin longs for our GPSs, too.
You know, the Lower Sac is always a great river. That area, year in and year out, almost any month of the year, is going to give you quality rainbow fishing, as good as anywhere in the world, really. There's the Upper Sac. It's a little trickier. It's more of an advanced river. Fall River is great. Of course, the Trinity, when it's on for steelhead, is pretty remarkable. It's, you know, this is really sort of the destination for a lot of fly fishers. Come in here because we have such a variety of waters. And a lot of us in the fly club retired to Redding specifically because of those opportunities.
Is that right?
Yes.
So how big would you say the fly fishing community is right here in Redding?
Well, I think we have about 160 members or so in our fly club, but mm-hmm. I would guess that the overall community may be two or three times that easily.
Well, it's got to be, I think.
Yeah. You've got such a variety of waters. You've got quality bass fishing, trout, steelhead. Hopefully the salmon will start returning. This is a very, very
nice.
Unique
yeah.
Area, and it's very important, I think, to the Redding City as a...
Well, Craig, we got to take a break. When we come back, I want to ask, you know, the thing that I from what I understand, the science of insects is the whole secret to fly fishing. You know, knowing which insect is there at that time and in that area of the water.
That's key to being successful.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about that when we come back. Carl Lindebot, Free Fire Radio, right here on KCNR 1460. Our guest co-host today is Cameron Middleton. Join us after these messages.
In a medical emergency, choose
1460 at Free Fire Radio. KCNR 1460. It is 7:56 in the morning. Good morning. Carl Lindebot. Linda's off on assignment. We got Cameron Middleton as our Thursday guest co-host, which is going to be a regular event from now on. Next week it'll be Judy Salter. Somewhat of somebody else from our community that wanted to come here and be on the show, and I can't wait. Judy's on. But today, we have Creighton Smith, who's talking about fly fishing. You're having your fly fishing fair this Saturday from 8 to 2 in Caldwell Park.
Yeah.
Go there if you want to learn how to, or at least learn something about fly fishing.
That's right. We'll have fly casting. We'll have spay casting, which is actually kind of a unique form of casting using a very long rod that allows you to reach out. We'll have fly tying, show people that... try to demystify a lot of this. The club has put together a new introduction to fly fishing manual, which is a good way to get started. A lot of people get kind of overwhelmed with all the technology and the equipment that's available, and this is to help get through.
Yeah,
that.
We were talking about that on the break. I must have 10 fly fishing books. You know, fly fishing for dummies, fly fishing for people who don't understand fly fishing for dummies. You know, and, you know, it's everything. It's on how to tie, you know, how to read water, do everything. And Creighton says that fly fishing has been the subject of...
I believe more books have been written on fly fishing than any other sport. And I think that's partially due to just the experience that somebody who knows something about writing experiences fly fishing. And just that experience is something that they want to set down in words. And the other part of it is the people that make the discoveries of new rivers and places and techniques as they've evolved with new equipment and so forth. And, Carl, you mentioned earlier all the little items.
Gadgets. You know what? This is the only sport you have to put a vest on to carry everything that you want. And then probably, you know, nets and have a hat with stuff on it. I mean, you know, it's kind of cool. Yes, there's a lot of gadgets.
Yeah. Fly fishermen can tend to be kind of techno geeks about this thing and have, you know, umpteen million little things sitting on a lanyard around their necks to handle every little nuances, you know, things from measuring the temperature of the water, threading their flies on as they get older in life and things of that nature. And we are definitely open to the next gadget. You know, we're always looking for the next little edge.
Well, one thing I do know that you have to be an expert on is bugs.
Yeah, it helps to know. Basically, there's sort of four groups of bugs that we have up here. The caddisfly, the mayfly, the stonefly. And maybe midges, and knowing something about their life cycle when you go down to a river, that's something else that we've covered in that introduction to fly fishing. When do these hatches happen so that when you're down there, we always encourage, as we're teaching newcomers, you know, study what's happening in the water, turn over a couple of rocks, see what you see. Once you've got that bug identified, you're going to be a lot more successful in selecting the fly fishing patterns that are just right for that time of year. And
I understand that you can buy those stoneflies down at that commune on the corner of California Market. That's a different kind of... Is that a different kind of fly?
I won't comment on that, but... and another thing, you know, about fly fishing and related to the bugs is when you come down to it, there are, about a million different fly fishing patterns, and they're always evolving. And Mike Mercer and some of the other ones at the fly shop have just been genius in coming up with very unique patterns. But, in fact, for getting you started, about a dozen flies, a dozen dry flies and a dozen nymphs, fairly simple to tie, are a great way to get started. And again, we try to get people into this on a basis that, doesn't have to be that complicated.
Yeah, I must have 30 flies that have never been in the water. Some of them probably got a wrapper on them, I think. But I've got these little boxes of them. People give them to me. I'm like, oh, yeah, I have no idea what these are.
Yeah, if they're too small to see, they're probably the right one to use because the small flies are definitely the most successful.
Oh, okay. We've got a few minutes left here, but the fair is free.
That's correct.
And bring down some of your stuff if you want to trade. You can and pick up from other people. They're probably selling some used stuff that's in good
shape. That's right. And we're offering a special on joining the Fly Club. This is a great way to participate in people. We have introduction to fly tying. We have casting clinics. We really are serious about trying to get new people into this sport and spread the word. And the fly fair will give you a good overview of what it's all about, and we'll have a lot of people there to answer your questions and things of that nature.
Well, it sounds like a good opportunity for people to come down and ask some of the experts some questions and if you're an expert yourself and want to come down, or if you're a newbie who really wants to try it out. I think I might want to try and come down in the later part of that, in the early afternoon, and
definitely
get a few tips in myself. So
yeah,
he would come down earlier, but Cameron doesn't get out of bed on Saturdays till noon.
Oh.
Now I, on the other hand, we do usually stack like 50 things to do, but you know, I will see you down there because
good.
I've been wanting to get into the fly fishing. I want it because it's to me, if you're going to live in Redding and in the North State, with some of the best fishing in the world, you ought to kind of maybe take advantage of it.
Exactly.
So, and you know,
if you lived at Pebble Beach, you'd probably play golf.
Yeah, something like that. But, okay. Well, Creighton Smith, thank you so much from the Shasta Trinity Fly Fishing Association.
Thank you,
Carl. Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, thank you.
And again, Saturday from 8 to 2 at Caldwell Park.
Yep.
Go down there, learn what you want, come down and meet people that just want to introduce you to the sport of fly fishing. I think it's a great movement. I think it's a great event. So, we'll be down there.
Good.
Can we bring our motorcycle?
I suppose so.
Okay.
Scare off fish.
You know, our guest for the next hour will be Mayor Patrick Jones. The mayor is here to answer your questions and talk about what he sees as the future for the city of Redding and what he sees as the future for the negotiations with our local unions and for you to ask him the hard question. The election is coming up soon. Next week, even more candidates. Carl Lindebach, Free Fire Radio, right here on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
You're listening to KCNR Shasta Redding.
Welcome back to Free Fire. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio here on KCNR 1460. It's 8:05 in the morning, September 30th, 605-4567 is our phone number. Or you can chat with us at kcnr1460.com. Carl and Linda Bott. And Linda is on assignment today, as she is going to be on all Thursdays as per her show and that. And we have a guest co-host every Thursday. And today, Cameron Middleton.
Thank you, Carl. Good morning.
Owner and chief firester or barista or whatever you call it, of River City Java, and also on the Redding City Planning Commission.
Yeah, and it's always a lot of fun to be both on the commission, and certainly fun to be a barista. It's one of the best jobs in the world. And just a quick hello, if I could, to Trina and Cheryl, and thank you two lovely ladies for covering for me this morning. They make absolutely the best lattes and mochas you could possibly get.
Okay, now, as part of being the job of co-host, is you get to do the weather.
I'm getting good at this, especially with a day like today. Last day of September is actually going to be 101, sunny and hot all day long. We're going to have a light northwest wind, and currently here downtown, it is 64 degrees.
Okay, now, before we get into our guest here, or start talking to our guest, Mayor Patrick Jones, who is there sitting in the hot seat, we have four tickets for Saturday night, October 2nd, reserve seating for the Monster Truck Rally. That's right, Monster Truck Rally, I have four tickets. These are $18 tickets for adults and children, 3 to 12, $10, but we've got four. It's a family pack. For Saturday, October 2nd, all you have to do is call 605-4567. You don't have to guess anything. You don't have to guess if Bob still has a shirt on. You don't have to guess if Cameron is drinking coffee right now. All you have to do is call 605-4567, and you get four tickets to the West Coast Monster Truck Nationals. Okay, our guest.
first caller,
yeah. All right, first caller. Now, our guest in the studio, Mayor Patrick Jones.
Well, good morning, Carl. Good morning, Cameron. Thank you guys for having me on this morning. And it's going to be a great week, even though I'm getting a little sore in the feet from walking neighborhoods. But it's great to get out in our community and walk, and that's what we do this time of year. So I'm pleased to be here and go on the air this morning with you guys. Thank you.
So what kind of campaigns have been?
It's really been an interesting campaign, different than the other three that I've ran. This is my fourth campaign, and this one's very different. It's more spirited and heated, and you know, we've encountered you know, some differences of opinions along the way, but I really think this one's coming down to a slate of union supported candidates versus some fiscal conservatives like myself, and I think that is defining this campaign without question. Earlier on, I thought it might be issues of like the convention center and you know, many issues that we have here in the city of Reading, but I really think it's coming down. Oh, Linda just kissed me, and I tell you, Linda, she has such the best kisses. I was disappointed that, you know, Cameron was here this morning. I like Cameron. Cameron's a great guy, but I mean, without Linda, I mean, it's
the second guest today to come in with a really down look as soon as they saw me.
But the campaign is shaping up well, and you know, win or lose, that's what happens when you run in a race. One or two things are going to happen. You're either going to win, you're going to lose. And for me, I'm comfortable as long as I give it all that I have. If I do everything that I know how to do, walk as hard as I can, get my message and my word out for my vision of Reading, you know, then I'm happy with whatever outcome, you know, happens. And that's the way I've done it in the past. That's the way I'm doing it today.
Okay. Well, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to start talking about which pocket. What difference does it make? Which pocket it comes
why
out
of? Why
does
it matter?
What, you know, what is fair? Tactics and... also being able to talk each other. Okay, when we get back, we're going to be talking on everyone. If you've got a question for Mayor Jones, 605-4567, go to the chat room also. If you don't want to identify yourself, I mean, just because a lot of people don't like calling, we understand that. We get lots of questions via the chat. So that's KCNR1460.com. The Free Fire Radio and KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media, the home of Community Radio. Carl and Linda Bott. Phone lines here are 605-4567. Turn down the music, Bob. Sounds like the Roman legions are marching in. Doom, 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 doom. Yeah, you know what? The phones are ringing. We're giving away tickets. Bob's got two hands and one brain. And so it's not. Slow down for Bob. Okay, our guest today is Mayor Patrick Henry Jones.
Well, the last we met, or this before break, you had said What does it matter? What pocket? You've heard some candidates or a candidate say, you know, if we have $10 in this pocket and you want $10 out of that pocket, what does it matter? And that's my point exactly. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And the reality is when we asked our public safety officers, both police and fire, to pay their CalPERS employee share, which the city's been picking up over the last 30 years because it was bargained for fairly 30 years ago. When we asked them to do that to help bridge this unprecedented drop in revenue, it was the right decision. And it was 9%, and it would keep everybody working. Keep in mind that if I were king, every position would be filled. But obviously, we would have to pay our employees less in pay or benefits. In this case, it's the benefit, the employee share. Most cities, they pay, employees pay the employee share of CalPERS. If we started lowering the wages, we couldn't be competitive in the future for hiring and retaining qualified personnel. And our police and fire are extremely qualified. They are excellent, and we have a very professional force, both in police and fire. It was the right decision. I stand behind that decision, and it was the right decision. And the fact of the matter is, it doesn't matter. And so that was the real question, is if it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter. And the decision that we made is the right decision. And most of the candidates are starting to come around to saying it is the right decision. And, you know, and so sometimes, you know, in campaigns, they get started off in a particular direction, and then as more debates and things happen, as we go through that, people start hearing the messages that get out, and I think that's starting to happen. We're starting to turn that corner.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Ron, here on KCNR.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
On that hotel that you're talking about that you're going to build down there by the rodeo grounds, who's going to pay for that?
Well,
I'm
not building it, nor is the city of Reading building that. That is a private group. Now, they'll be working with Turtle Bay and McConnell Foundation, but that is not a city project. I did not support that project. I felt that, you know, there are that land belongs to the people of Reading, and if they so chose to purchase that land, that I might consider it. I still have some huge concerns with safety issues, with the in and the out concerning fire. I think we're getting a lot of things down in that area without the correct access in and out for our public, you know, safety officials to get in there and do a job. If there were a fire there, it could be pretty serious. And the question is, if I were going to build that motel down there, would I get the same look as what Turtle Bay is getting today? And I don't know if I would. I really don't know if I would. So I'm not supporting that project, but it is not a city project. That is a privately funded project that's not going to be paid for by the taxpayers, other than the land that it sits on is your land.
Does that answer your question, Ron?
So they'll just take the land and somebody else will own it then?
That is correct. That is correct.
Is this a lease, though? Is it a lease? Or
they have the land itself is leased through the city of Reading for a long-term lease. It's a very inexpensive lease long-term. That is correct.
Okay. Thank you, Ron.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Okay, out of the chat room here, Patrick, if you and Ken Murray get elected, can you two work together for the
Absolutely.
Betterment of the city?
You know, people don't remember, but we served together from 2006 to 2008. And while I differ with Ken on many issues, we certainly work together. And I want folks to remember that, you know, we have a diverse community. We have many different types of people, different age groups, and it's okay to disagree. And when you do that in a respectful manner and you start conversations off and we make decisions, would we want all decisions inside the city of Reading 5-0 decisions one way or the other? I don't think we would. I don't think that would be reflective of the community that we have. I think it is essential to have a diverse council. And we have that today more than ever before, and I'm proud of that. And so having different types of people on there is not a bad idea. I'm in my 40s. I'm 42 years old. Having someone as slightly younger than Ken Murray is nice. Having women is nice. Having all types of different people on council is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. And would we see eye to eye on everything? Absolutely not. But that's all right. We can agree to disagree.
One of the other questions is, considering your trip back east with the developer,
yes,
would you reconsider that? that trip?
I would not. That decision that I made was the correct decision. And doing it all over again, the only change that I would do is I would simply pay for it myself at the beginning instead of reimbursing the developer later. Anytime I'm looking for funds for Redding, California, looking for infrastructure funds for Redding, that is a good thing. The overpass at Oasis Road is 40-plus years old. It needs to be done. It's a safety issue. I went to D.C. to help shed some light on that particular problem that is a City of Redding infrastructure problem. And the reality here is that I went there on behalf of the city for a project that was already determined to be a number one project, and it didn't cost the taxpayers one dime. And let me talk about this developer that I do not know very well. Some have said, you're friends with this developer. I have never received any campaign contributions from this developer. I've received very, very few dollars from any developer inside the City of Redding limits. Most people, if you look back, which is all public record, my amounts of money received during campaigns, I'm the guy on the shoestring. I'm the guy that's raising $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 and running campaigns. I've never raised the kind of money that my opponents have raised in the 40s and 50s and 60s and $80,000. And that money all came from developers. One of my opponents, Ken Murray, has said that I'm friends with Levinson Development. Ken has received over $3,000 from Levinson. I have not received one nickel. Who's friends?
Okay, we're going to take a break here. The chat room is pretty full. We've got a number of questions there. We want to address that. We want to address things that were said during some of the debates. And again, our phone lines here are 605-4567. Just give us a call. Ask the mayor a question. And like I said, we'll start taking and we'll be taking more questions out of the chat room on KCNR1460.com.
Timberline Heat.
60. Carl and Linda Bott. Linda's off on assignment, so our guest host today is Cameron Middleton. This portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive. Finest tobacco emporium in the state. Greatest walk-in humidor you're ever going to see. Espresso Joe's. It's going to be hot today. Hot. So you go in and you get those chilled drinks, those ice drinks, and you're right next door, and you take your computer out with that free Wi-Fi, and you sit in there. Great place. Tobacco and Brew. Joe and Shelley do so much for this community, so much for our veterans. Go down to Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive. Our guest, Patrick Jones.
Thank you, Carl. How hot will it be?
Today, it's supposed to get up to 102 degrees.
That's hot.
According to Cameron. But then again, Cameron sits in a coffee shop all day, so I'm not sure.
That's the most brilliant job in the whole world, I think.
Okay, here's some questions that are come rolling in here. The Oasis Road.
Yes,
why
sir?
Do we need four lanes on, four lanes off, bigger than in Sacramento?
Well, the reality is that we, even though we're in a global recession of an unprecedented nature, we don't stop planning and preparing for the future. We always have an eye towards the future. And Oasis Road is an area, it's still inside the city limits. If it was outside city limits, that would not be of a concern to me. But it is inside the city limits. And when you take a look at the traffic on Gold Hills, Terre Oaks, Bear Mountain, and the new subdivision coming on Oasis Road itself, Seven Bridges, you get a picture that this overpass, poured in 1965, is not capable of the traffic today, and it's dangerous. Now, we've spent our Reinvestment Act monies on that project, and that was a council voted, you know, by the majority of council to do that, because we know it's unsafe today. It's out of date by two decades at least, and it needs to be done. Once the overpass is improved to current standards, and those standards I leave up to the engineers, whether it's four lanes or six lanes, it simply needs to be improved. If you build it too small and then you have to come back, it's a waste of taxpayers' dollars. We've seen that at South Bonneview, where you have to come back on an interchange and redo it again and again and again. It's nice to be able to understand the full needs of an area and then be able to do the overpass in one time. It saves a tremendous amount of money because it's going to sit that way most likely for the next 30 or 40 years untouched. We want to build it right, and I leave that up to the engineers as to what right is, but I know that it is not up to standards today. It's dangerous. We're trying to make improvements, but you know, these infrastructure projects of this nature are expensive. The bids are down right now. That's the good thing, that if we could attract some funds to this project, it could be done for half what it was estimated at just 3 years ago. And so there's some money to be saved if we can move on that project today. Once the overpass is complete, certainly the I-5 frontage is attractive to many retail, and we can retain certain businesses that otherwise might leave our city and take that tax revenue with them. It's important to me. It's important to this council.
Okay. The chat room has literally exploded here and with so many questions. Let's go to the phones here. Jim, you're on KCNR.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Patrick, I was over there the other day at the Oasis Road, and it appears that they're putting the approaches back in the same width as the curb and gutters and things are going back in the same width as what's there. So how's that thing getting widened? That should be a four-lane across there.
I absolutely agree. This project only did a loop, southbound loop on-ramp. That's all that it accomplished. We're making some improvements on the abutments, but it's minor. The project here was only a loop on-ramp, so we've only scratched the surface there. We only had around $2.2 million to spend on that, if I'm not mistaken, or at least that's what was spent on it. And it won't fix all the problems. It absolutely won't fix it. It's still going to be dangerous. It will be better than what it was, but we still need attention to Oasis. And you're right, we're only making small improvements on it. We have to attract funds to be able to do the project. Thus, my trip to Washington, D.C. to try to do that.
So, well, was this thing being built in such a fashion that you could go in and add two more lanes to it without doing the abutments?
Absolutely. The loop had to be done anyways, so this isn't going to mess us up down the road when the widening begins, if funding can be, you know, had.
And then all you do is just widen the deck versus going in and doing all the understructure.
That is correct. That is correct. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Jim.
Thank you. Bye.
Cameron.
So, Patrick, there's going to be more phases to this project.
Right. This is a phase one, and as funding becomes available, there'll be a phase two and maybe a phase three. We have to take it in phases because we do not have the full funding today. And, you know, and thus we have to go hunt those funding sources down. And, you know, so it's a situation where a little bit today helps, but it certainly isn't going to solve the problem. You know, and I wished we would have addressed this problem because it is an infrastructure issue, you know, many years ago. But at least we're addressing it today. We're not going to leave those people out at Gold Hills and Terre Oaks and Bear Mountain Road stranded. We know that interchange needs to be improved. We're doing what we can to improve it.
Okay, we've got, about a minute left here. Okay, do you support selling the Civic Center and the rodeo?
Absolutely not. You know, those are some of the things that, to me, remind me of what Reading is about. And the rodeo grounds and what they do for this community, they absolutely need to stay there or have an appropriate home in place before they move, and that would be their decision. The Civic Auditorium is so helpful to so many different small groups. You know, I couldn't see that changing, and I'm going to support keeping the convention center as it is and promoting it and making Reading even better.
Okay. We've got about a couple seconds, not enough really to get into a question. Our guest is Mayor Patrick Jones, running for re-election for the city council, all of the candidates have been on the show, and you all get to ask questions. And there are hundreds of questions, literally, in the chat room. We'll get back to those. Carl and the Bot, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. Carl and Linda Bott, September 30th. It's 8:35 in the morning. This portion of the show brought to you by Cypress Square Barbershop, DC Tim and the Man in Black. Right off Athens Avenue, they give great haircuts. No styling there. A little butch wax maybe, but you're not getting any of that gel that goes on your hair. No, no footy things, no finger things, nothing like that. It's just a good solid haircut. And they give discounts to veterans. They're great people down there, and yes, it's man's last stronghold. That's Cypress Square Barbershop, right off Athens Avenue. Our guest is Mayor Patrick Jones, and my guest co-host is Cameron Middleton. Cameron.
Patrick, had a quick question. A number of people have spoken to me and said that, you know, why don't we start at the top? Why don't we start with upper management and start with some of those cuts there and lead by example?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, I shouldn't say all, but management, certainly upper management, has taken some effort towards reducing their pay. They are on furlough days, and that has an effect to what they take home. They've also foregone some upcoming raises, and so that has helped as well. When the Record Searchlight printed the total pay and compensation for at least everyone over $100,000, to me that was quite alarming to see it in that fashion, to see that our top city manager was costing the taxpayers $283,000, seeing that we had 436 people making over $100,000 in pay and benefits. To me, that was alarming, and I took immediate action by asking top management to start paying their CalPERS employee share, which is 7%. We did that in closed session. That did not pass. I tried to do what I could to get our top management, our top leaders, to pay their employee share. How are we possibly going to ask the rank and file workers to do the same if top management is not willing to do the same? And so I attempted to do that. Council did not support that, and that failed. And
was there a reason for this? I mean, why was it voted against?
Well, you know, I don't speak for other council members, so it's you know, that's something that you can ask them, unfortunately.
Well, I think we need to, because if we're going to ask the fire, police, and other people to pay their 9%, why can't we ask our top management that are making well over $150,000 a year to do the same thing?
To me, it was a question. I felt that top management, with the type of pay and benefits that they have, would consider that. I was wrong. Management did not
Did
not like that.
Didn't they get together and say, hey, now we're going to get into a union?
They are starting the process now to create a electrical management union. This will be our ninth union, with one unrepresented still, because of just this one issue, roughly. And of course, I think it goes deeper and further back. But you know, the unions are tough, and again, this election is really going to be defined by the unions and what they are doing in this global recession. And are they feeling the pain, so to speak, of what everyone else out there is feeling, when most people have lost 20%, 30%, 40% of their wealth? Have city workers seen anything close to that? We've had to cut expenses in the city of Reading. Revenue is down almost $20 million of ongoing cuts to the general fund. That is huge. It's unprecedented. We've never had drops like this year after year, quarter after quarter, double-digit drops. And we are dangerously close to running out of funds. We need our employees to step up. The employee share, even though it was bargained for many, many years ago, three decades ago, it's the right decision. We need our employees to start paying that today. And I think almost all the candidates in this race agree with that. They're simply saying, not now. And my response is, now is the right time. This is the time that we need to start saving money, keeping people working. That's what we need to be doing right now. If I were king, I want every one of our good city workers to be working today. I think that's important. I think it's important for them and their families. I think it's important for the community. And yes, they would have to be working for 7% or 9% less. But I think in these tough times, that's quite acceptable. And, you know, that's what I would do if I could. And I've been trying to do what I can. But unfortunately, until you can count to three on council, you can't make the changes that you desire. And I think in time we will get there. You know, the road's going to be a little bumpy between here and the election. These next 30 days are fairly critical. You know, all the candidates are good people. And they all have different viewpoints on different ideas. But no matter who wins in this election, they're going to be faced with that same budget that I am today. And they're going to have to make some very tough decisions. And we need the cooperation of our workers, of our unions.
Okay, we've got to take a quick break here. Carl Lindebaugh, Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
We mean business when...
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott, our guest co-host today, Cameron Middleton. This portion of the show brought to you by BNT Satellite, right off Airport Road. Doug Tooley, 244-1988. Dish Satellite does great work. Got a great crew. Guarantees his work. Veteran of the 82nd Airborne and a local guy. Been in business since 1985. That's 244-1988. Doug Tooley, B&T Satellite. We use them. You should. Our guest is Mayor Patrick Jones. And, Mayor, I'm trying to get through the questions here in the chat room, and I am being overrun. Okay, yes, we know Tony Curtis died today. It was very sad. He was 85 years old. But you know what? Guy had a pretty good life. Okay, other ones. What benefits have you given up? What are you paying for?
Well, I've given up most anything of value so far. When I first got on council, the first thing that I did was not accept any of the health care benefits. And I could have received that 50% premium for the rest of my life. Now, that has a value of about $18,000 a year. I've saved the taxpayers around $74,000 to date. I receive a total pay and compensation of $7,200 a year, I believe it is. I do have to pay into Social Security, so that costs the taxpayers $162. But I'm the only council member that I know of that has done that. And the reason that I did that, because I didn't think it was fair. I didn't go to City Hall to continue to take advantage of some of these pay and benefits that are offered. If I want that, I have to earn it, and I didn't feel that I would earn it, and I didn't want to be in a position of asking our employees to make some small concessions when I wasn't willing to do that myself. Now, most council members, with their pay and benefits, they're going to be in the $26,000 range. I take home $7,000. So I've given up more than half of what my total would be, and I don't mind doing that because I think it's the right thing to do. And if reelected, I will continue to do the same thing. And if I give up anything more, I think I'll be having to write the city a check each month just for being there. But I've done my part. I've tried to do my part. I think it's important that if you're going to ask your employees to make some small concessions, and I'm not talking about stripping all their benefits. We're just talking about small changes in their benefits. They're still going to have some of the finest benefits in the whole country. We have to make some small changes because what we have today is unsustainable. And I've done my part. And I'll continue to do my part. I'm not going, if reelected, to start taking those benefits again. I'm going to continue to not accept them.
Well, you know, one of the things that has just come out lately is that while we're in the middle of what we pay our people of the ten cities they compared us to, are you familiar with this?
I am.
Yet we seem to be paying at the top of how we're paying the people. Not that we're paying them any that much differently, but it's how we're paying them that we're leading the pack. How do you explain that?
And it's a tough one, and I haven't analyzed all the data on that. And I know Mary Machado's done a good job trying to put some numbers together, and we are analyzing those right now, so unfortunately I don't have all that data. But the bottom line is most cities in California are struggling with the same issues that we are today, and most cities in California are on an unsustainable path. That decisions that were made a decade ago are not going to be able to be sustained, and certainly in a global recession, they can't be. And unless we have contracts that are open, good faith negotiations truly aren't going to take place in the manner that they need to, because those contracts are not open, and those are binding contracts that were obligated in good faith, and they will be adhered to. And we can ask our employees for help. They do not have to help if they do not choose to. But we have made good decisions. I stand behind the decisions that I've made. I'd like to let the people know that the majority of council, I do not believe that they have been mean or rude, or I don't believe they've also been disrespectful. We have been firm, and we have said no. And those are not signs of disrespect, but the economy is in such shape, in such poor condition, that we don't have the flexibility to negotiate in the normal terms. Normally, if we needed a 7% over here, we'd give 6 or 7% here in another form of a benefit or pay. We can't do that today. We don't have that kind of money today. We are out of money, and we're going to need concessions back from our employees if we're going to keep everybody working. That's my goal.
Wonderful. And, Patrick, one of the things I was wanted to ask you about as well are these ballot initiatives, mm-hmm. Measure A, Measure B, first one being pension reform, second one being health care reform.
Yes.
Why do we need those?
We need those because this has been such a difficult thing. And, I'm not a big fan of ballot initiatives, but these two issues are two very important issues that past councils and probably previous councils will have a tough time getting cooperation with the unions from. And so we wanted the public to weigh in on it. You know, and when we have some really tough decisions like this, I don't think ultimately it's a bad way to do it, is to allow the public to weigh in and to say, hey, should the employees be paying their employee share, which is 7 or 9%, and can we continue to have a 50% premium paid by the City of Reading towards workers once they retire and continue to have an unfunded liability reaching and surpassing $100 million in a liability? Can we continue to go in that direction? We have been trying to change those things, and we've ran into great difficulty because those are very good things for our workers. Unfortunately, we can't afford them. And so we're asking the public to weigh in on it. And, you know, they said these have no teeth. Measure A, because we're not a charter city, has minimal teeth, but it does set a direction for council to start the negotiation process. But Measure B has more teeth, and it will give direction to council in a more binding manner. And so these measures have said that they would cost $50,000. That would be if it was a special election. This is not the case. The cost to society for these measures may be in the $15,000 to $25,000 range, and I think it's worthy to spend that type of money if the outcome shows that the public wishes us to continue in the direction to get these benefits under control and something in a sustainable manner. And keep in mind, we're not talking about getting rid of post-retirement health care. We're talking about a system that's vested, that for every year that you work, you get 2% paid towards that, and you earn it. And I think that's fair.
And what if it goes the other way and they say, no, we don't want this change?
If the public doesn't want it, then each council member will have to decide, you know. And if you have a large majority of people saying, you know, if it's a close one like 49-51, that's a tough call. But if it's an overwhelming, resounding no, like 70 or 80%, then I think council would adhere to that.
Okay. Let's go to the phones. Mark? I guess we won't. Mark, give us a call back. We lost you there. Okay, let's take a break. Let's call in the bot, Free Fire Radio. Our guest is Mayor Patrick Jones. We've got just about 6 minutes when we come back, and we want to talk about what's being done to let positions off. You know, before we lay off our police and fire, have we looked at the top and every other position to start winnowing down those that perhaps we don't need? Carl Lindebot, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
Hi, this is Diane.
No, I won't. You can stand me up.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. Carl Lindebot, our guest host today is Cameron Middleton, and our guest on the show today is Mayor Patrick Jones. It's our last segment, Patrick. What have you done to look at the top, get rid of them before you get rid of a fireman?
Well, it's true. You know, police and fire are high priorities, the highest priority, and people are very concerned about that. And, you know, even though public safety eats up the lion's share of our general fund, they're still top priorities. And we want to save everyone that we can, and we've worked hard to try to do that the best that we can. We've looked at things like consolidating departments, municipal utilities, for example. Our personnel director, for example, that certainly come up last Sunday in a debate. We have eliminated that position, essentially. We have hired Bill Avery as our top negotiator. Council has contracted with him to spend up to, but not necessarily, $50,000 a year, see how that works. So far, it's been working super. This gentleman is professional. He is well-liked. He's efficient, he's clear, he's straightforward, he fits the council very well, and the bottom line, through that situation change, we're going to save the taxpayers in paying benefits around $100,000 a year. And that goes into the general fund, where we can help support police and fire. And there's been other ways, too. We've cut out funding for Turtle Bay. Our rolling stock has been stretched even further. I mean, we have borrowed $3.2 million out of risk management to go over in the general fund for police and fire. That's something we don't normally do. But again, these are tough times, and we're doing everything we can to keep these guys working and keep them out there. But it still does not mean we turn our attention away from the main issues of, can we sustain these benefits, and they have to be addressed.
One of the things, Patrick, that's come up recently, too, is with regard to campaign signs. And everybody sees them all over town. You see them in some different spots in front of various businesses.
I haven't seen any.
And, of course, the place is littered. However, there's been some complaints and some issues brought up that some businesses that have had up some of your signs, some signs of some other candidates, have been approached by people and told that they will be boycotted if they don't take some of these signs down.
Yeah, it's disturbing, and you know, I've tried to put my signs up in a manner where I've put them up before. You know, I don't want to put any signs up where they're not appreciated. I try to put them up on businesses that that are kind of like-minded in a way, and where they just simply know me and allow me to put a sign up, and I try to get the position of those signs. I think most candidates try to do that. What I wasn't prepared for this year was that union members and non-union members going to those particular businesses and making comments and of a variety of degree, and some of those is as much as we're not going to shop here, nor were our friends. I think those are the type of tactics that, you know, I don't think I've seen them in Reading before. I've certainly never experienced them in my three runs before. You know, and that type of tactic, I don't think the public appreciates. I mean, I certainly don't go to businesses where I see my opponent's signs and say, hey, you know, I'll never shop here and my friends won't shop here because you have, you know, this particular sign here. I just don't think that's appropriate. And I don't think people will tolerate that very well. I think that will be counterproductive to the cause. And that type of thuggery, as I call it, may be seen in other cities. I don't think it's appreciated here. People are starting to see that. It's real. It is real. It's not just an imagination of a couple candidates being a little bit upset. But it's real. It's out there. And I think we're seeing that across the whole nation. It's not just here in Reading. We see it throughout California that as these elections get close now, 30 days out roughly, we're seeing the unions step up their pressure. And that's okay to step up walking and talking and getting your flyers out and those types of things. That's all very appropriate, and that just comes with the territory. But that type of pressure on hurting businesses in a tough global recession, I think it's uncalled for. I would never consider doing that. I'm disappointed in those that do.
But it's like in everything else, Patrick, is that if you don't agree with the message, you can choose not to support that. You know, either radio stations, TV stations, newspapers,
absolutely,
candidates, you know, it's people's right to do it. I think what it might be is if it's one thing to say, hey, you know what, if you're going to support him, I'm not going to support you. Maybe it's the way it's approached. And I think that's some of the things I've heard, though I have, and again, I have not heard this from directly from people, but you know, I'm starting to get phone calls here. I had another one of the notes here said something about that they raised pay in the personnel department after the personnel director was cut loose, but they raised pay on some of the other people.
Well, some of the other jobs did increase in job demands. Our last contract with IBEW, we raised pay 3%. You know, here we are in a global recession, and we're unlike a lot of cities. We have actually tried in certain areas to still give some small increases in pay for people that do good work. We have tried to do that where we can. It does not eliminate the fact that we have to address the overlining big problems of post-retirement health care, CalPERS issue. These are the types of issues that have huge money amounts. We'd like to reward our good workers when we can. It has to be with small rewards, not large, and we have to get our hands around these overwhelming issues.
Okay. Donna, you're on line one. Do you have a question?
Yes. Good morning. I wanted to ask Mayor Jones, where do we get yard signs and how do we make a contribution? How do we make our checks out to?
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. Yard signs, this is the first year I ever ran out, so that's a good sign. I have more coming in about a week, Donna, so if you want to give me a call at 222-3223, give me a call and I can make sure that you get me that I get you a yard sign or two or however many that you need. Patrick Henry Jones for City Council 2010, if anyone would like to make a contribution, be more than welcome. And my mailing address is 1600 East Cypress Avenue, number 2, Reading, California, 96002, and I appreciate any help.
Okay. Roberta, you're on. We got 30 seconds.
Okay. I wanted to ask, how many union employees does the City of Reading hire, and what was their average salary?
Okay, Roberta, thank you.
Well, you know, in full-time employees, the number is somewhere around 730, somewhere in that neighborhood. The average believe it or not, is $119,000 a year as an average. So that is extremely high. We have over 437 workers at pay and benefits over $100,000. I hope that answers the question.
Okay. Gosh, we've run out of time here. We want to have everybody on twice. This is, so we can get in there, maybe even combine a couple of you at the same time to talk about issues before the election. Carl Lindebaugh, Free Fire Radio. Tomorrow, our guest will be Mark Beecham, who's going to be here. And he's a great guy to hear. He can discuss every facet of this. What, Bob? You're sitting there looking at me. Okay, we're ready to go. Carl Lindebaugh, Free Fire Radio. Thanks a lot, Cameron Middleton, for being here.
Thank you, Carl. Appreciate it.
We like our guest co-host. And just remember, it's the good guys against the bad guys. Which are you?
You're listening to the home of Free Fire Radio, KCNR Shasta Radio.